what I was created for now. I'm gonna let you know what I'm feeling now. I must be quite emphatical. I'm feeling plain ecstatical. What? I might just float right up to the sea.
Hi, everybody. Things are going very well. I've got some very interesting things going on in my life in relation to pictures, and all kinds of wonderful scripts are happening. I don't know what's happening to my stars, but they are really coming out of the woodwork, as we say in my business. So it's a very interesting time for me. And during all of this wonderful, and I'll tell you about it later what some of these scripts are. I'm a little superstitious not to talk about it before they really all get green-lighted. But during this time when all these things came forward, I read a book called Balloon to the Moon by Regina Zinovich. And Zinovich is her name. And she is a psychotherapist and an intuitive. And what she's written in this book is just extraordinary. She's been guiding clients back into what she calls the splendor of their full lives for the last 15 years through her therapy and her workshops and writing. She has a master's of social work, did postgraduate work that included study in Gestalt therapy, and also shamanism, which I'm very interested in. She really does bring a very unique and provocative blend to her work, and her prose in the book is just wonderful. Don't forget this name. It's Balloon to the Moon, A Guide to Vibrant Living. So let's welcome Regina. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. It's wonderful to be on the line with you.
Yeah, you really have. And you have a second book that you're working on called Love is the Currency of Happiness.
Yeah, I'm working on that right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's coming out in 2003, the spring?
Yeah, next spring.
Next spring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Regina, I have to congratulate you because this book, Balloon to the Moon, is something that I think people should travel with in their suitcase. It's kind of a, it's simple, very profound, and I enjoyed your prose so much. Thank you for being so talented.
Well, thank you.
So let's just proceed here because we have to see how this unfolds.
Okay.
What I loved, as a matter of fact, I'm... I'm going to borrow from some of your things with some little speeches I have to make in relation to my life. And what I loved so much is how you introduced in your book the idea that we are taught to be what is expected of us, not who we really are. Could you expand on that a little bit? And that gets us started because it is such a profound thought.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I guess, really, as you said that, what came to mind was my daughter. And it's something that I think I've always known, just intuitively, and I've worked with a lot of survivors of really severe trauma and have watched people kind of struggle to pull themselves back into a life. So I've been aware, I think, my whole career of how important childhood is.
Did your daughter suffer some kind of trauma that you had to help her back with?
No. These are my clients. But then, so that's the background. Then 8 years ago, my daughter came. My daughter's eight. Mm-hmm. And I think watching her grow without the trauma, it just intensified and amplified for me how important it is for children to be able to be themselves, and how much our society And we want to make them who we think they should be.
Yeah.
Rather than letting them unfold and letting them become who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're incredible beings.
Now, let me ask you the profound question, which is always interesting to me. Do you think your daughter or anyone else came in with certain issues that, yes, they have to be themselves, but the issues that they come in to work out impact and inform what kind of people they are this time around? Isn't that right?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I think we come in to learn. I think we come with a lesson plan. And it certainly affects who we are. But then I think we have incredible choice in terms of what we do with what we're given. And that's something that I really see in my work with survivors in terms of why do some people make it? Why do some people make it and become incredible human beings and others don't?
Why is that?
I think there's something different going on. I think that they're making different choices. I think we have choices all along. And I think the more we steer away from, I guess, our higher selves for, you know, higher power, however you want to phrase it,
mm-hmm.
the more we choose to move away from that, I think the darker and darker and darker it gets. And then the harder it is to say yes to possibility or yes to transformation.
Well, now, how does a child then, from your studies, because you talk about how the more we grow beyond the womb, the more challenging our lives become. How does a child then know to get in touch with its higher power? I mean, I know we have no spiritual support system in this culture at all anyway.
No, there's not. And I think for a child who's living in trauma, it's just tenfold. I think that the line that you just read from the book is true for all of us. I mean, I think we are just, I certainly wasn't supported in any way, shape, or form. I was funneled very rigidly towards a specific belief system. I wasn't at all invited to just kind of blossom from inside. I don't know how some people choose to do something different and some people don't.
And do you think we bring very profound memories of difficulties that went before this lifetime?
I imagine that we do. I imagine that we do.
I know there are a lot of psychiatrists doing past life therapy, but there's others that don't do that, that have been meeting and saying they can't really unhook their patients from these chronic anxieties and terrible traumas that seem not to be attached to anything in their background that they can remember. And so they're beginning to look at the fact that the soul is the repository of so much more experience than we're giving it credit for.
Right. And I also think the people that, what you just said in terms of they can't unhook their clients, I'm probably repeating it incorrectly, but that they can't unhook or help their clients rid themselves of this. I think the reality is I don't do past life work in regression in my work, but I have an awareness of it. But the greater thing that I have an awareness of is I'm really not doing anything. I'm helping. This is all inside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is all inside the person. And I think whatever has happened to a person, whether it's in this life or whether they're coming in with trauma from past lives, I think that's possible also. I think the universe sends us with the keys. I really believe that.
I know. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I just wonder if we come in expecting difficult challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And then something has to help us understand that we, to be our true selves, we have to expect the happiness.
I think that's true, and we have to deviate. We have to move away from what everybody else is doing. We have to stop and say, wait a minute, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
And that is so hard because our society tells us exactly what we should want, exactly what we should need, exactly what will bring us pleasure. It does it in childhood, and it certainly does it in adulthood. And I think people get lost. I mean, without severe trauma or not, I think people get lost. And I think it's often crisis that
helps them see clearly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting. Have you been to Russia or China ever?
Well, my daughter is from China.
Oh, she is?
Yes.
Well, you know, when I was first in Russia in the 60s, when they were deciding they would observe the talents of the children in the schools, And they would guide the children in the direction of what their talents seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you like what your talent is, or you might like something that has nothing to do with your real talent?
Well, I think that the piece that I like, and I don't imagine this is how Russia or China was doing it, but the notion of seeing talent and not funneling a child into a certain direction,
mm-hmm.
and allowing that talent to blossom, I think is wonderful. I don't imagine that that's how China and Russia were doing this.
Well, they would take
the education.
They would actually take them from the general population and put them into specialized study programs.
Yeah.
When they were very young, it seemed to me to be too totalitarian.
Yeah,
but
I'd be in trouble. Because
you have talent in one direction doesn't mean that you like doing it.
Absolutely not. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that hopefully a life that's fully lived is going to have many, 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 many things on the plate. So
yeah.
I think to track, you know, a child, the piece that I liked when you said that, though, that I think we don't do in our society right now, we're starting to change a little bit,
mm-hmm.
is really nurturing, and probably in Russia it was a competitive type thing, because I'm now thinking of the gymnasts and the skaters. And
well, that was different when it came to their sports. Oh,
okay.
Definitely. They just
okay.
made them into little athletes for the state.
Right.
But
right.
no, I was interested in people who had real talent for mathematics, for art, for painting, for singing, for any kind of human endeavor. I think sometime around 6 or 8, they began to see that. I hope the people that were observing the children knew what they were doing.
Right.
But I wondered what that did to their souls, so to speak. Because, you know, sometimes you can just be talented at something you don't care anything about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me ask you something, Regina. Some of these schools that have no structure, basically. This is a new kind of way of allowing children to develop and grow.
Right,
they can study if they want to.
Right.
They can do nothing if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They can... what do you think about that? Because I'm hearing that when children are allowed to just be, that they find their own impetus for wanting to learn. Do you think that's so?
I imagine it is so. I mean, I think that when there's an open environment and there's love and support, I mean, children, we're not just children, we are voraciously curious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to manufacture that or make that happen. I mean, we really do want to be alive. We want to be alive. We want to be, you know, interacting with our environment, and children are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're a little confused as to what is proper education, because even very young children are learning. They're learning more than probably, you know, in a year. Well, they are. They're learning more than I'm learning this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're wide open. They're learning when they play. They're, you know, and we have this notion that somehow there should be pain, you know, that somehow it should be really hard, and we should be in a, you know, a chair, and we should be in one place. And no, so I think that I imagine that there's a lot of value to that, and I can't speak to it directly or personally, but I think that we're going to see a lot of changing in terms of how we educate our children, or at least some differences in terms of how children who are being educated in the way that you're talking about
mm-hmm.
End up thriving. I mean, I imagine that they'll thrive and that they'll continue.
And I suppose if they're alive today, they are alive in an energy pattern, particularly since the millennium,
mm-hmm.
that stimulates their learning. I mean, you talk about life of a 7-year-old today is more challenging than a 50-year-old a century ago.
Absolutely. And I think that we're also in this, I think we're in this warp time right now. I think that we have this incredible kind of wind tunnel that anybody's welcome to kind of hop on into and
mm-hmm.
just go to wherever it is that they want to go. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised by anything that my daughter does. I mean, if she tells me one day she's going to drift over to school and she levitates and floats out the window, that's really not going to shock me.
You wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think I'll be able to do that in this lifetime, but I would not be surprised if she did. I mean, I just think, you know,
you were talking
it's a whole new world.
A minute ago about how children just naturally play in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that kids are actually creating their natural environment around them by their positivity?
Yeah.
Do you do?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I see a difference when I look at my daughter and I look at her classmates. It's so clear that already she's 8, she's in the second grade, and it in a way it's really sad because some of these kids really need some help in getting out of the tracks that they're in,
mm-hmm.
because they are already sending out messages to people and they're getting messages back that are consistent with that. So some children are already sending out a lot of positive energy, and they're getting a lot of positive energy and love back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by 7, 6, 7, 8, 9, there are kids that are sending a lot of negative energy out, and they're getting a lot of negative energy back.
Now, are we contributing to that in television and Hollywood movies?
Oh, absolutely.
You think so?
Absolutely. Not all. I think that Hollywood has an incredible opportunity. You can be transported and transformed through a movie or through a television show, and I think we have the best of the best right now, and we have the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it just reflects the planet. We've got both.
That's right, because the polarities are so much more extreme and obvious,
yes,
huh?
Yes, yes, yes.
What a responsibility. Well, I love the way, from my point of view, that you were taking what you were writing from a film point of view. In other words, we are the writers and the directors and
right.
the actors
right.
of
right.
our own lives. So we
right.
create our own scenes.
Right.
And we're doing that from the time we're young.
Absolutely. And the only difference is when we are young, I think more so than we as children do it, I think our parents do it for us. That I think it's really in adulthood that we begin to be capable of saying, wait a minute, I really don't like the way this is turning out. Let me take a look at what I'm doing. I think as children, we really don't have the mechanism. I mean, I think that's why we grow up in families. And mm-hmm. ostensibly, when a family is working well, a parent is helping a child create. And if a parent is seeing that a child is starting to create something that is really dangerous for this child because it's going to be a lifetime pattern until they break it, I think a parent has a voice in terms of saying, wait a minute, cut, let's take a look at this.
Yeah, I'm trying to reconcile the belief that I have that we choose our parents when we come in and we choose the environment in which we will grow up.
Absolutely.
So how do we reconcile that? I guess that is the learning process. If we come into a very, let's say, violent family,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then our task in coming into life is to find love in that violence, I suppose.
Or to get through, to get through the violence and to find love. I mean, I think all of us are going towards light or love in whatever sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that violence, I mean, I have never seen somebody heal all the way through something and not be able to turn it around. I mean, and I think that's true of all of us,
mm-hmm.
that any trauma that we've gone through, and we've all gone through trauma, some with capital T's, some with little T's,
mm-hmm.
but life is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we've all had challenges. We've all been slammed up against the wall and had to deal with it. But I think as our lives unfold, we can look back and say, oh, I get that now.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. That wasn't really what I thought I wanted in childhood. But come to think of it, that made it possible for me to XYZ now.
Right. And then do we recognize that we were our own storytellers when we were young?
Even then, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think maybe we don't do it kind of as children in the here and now in the same way that we can do it as adults, unless somebody teaches us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think somebody can say what you're putting out, you're getting back. Children are very wise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we underestimate them so much.
Mm-hmm.
Children get this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that far from the other side. I mean, they really get this.
And that's why positive stories are necessary to read to children, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And then they can interpret and identify in their own lives
if
that story is positive and their story is not.
Absolutely. 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 And that's why the some of the media is so dangerous for children,
mm-hmm.
Because they learn to take in other people's stories without, and particularly in television, without learning how to become script writers. They don't learn to direct. They learn to become an audience member.
Yeah.
And so it's really important for it to be balanced. Whereas in a story, and longer stories, like a chapter story, a child might read one chapter and then leave it. And their mind is, his or her mind is going through what might happen. And is painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
So even as they're listening to the story, is painting a picture. and then to have that peppered with some television or some shows. But I see so many children just living, they never learn how to direct.
Yeah.
They never learn how to direct.
And when is a child aware of his or her belief? I mean, you talk so much and so eloquently about we have to pay attention to our beliefs. When does that begin, that we realize we have beliefs?
I think it depends on the kind of family we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I know in our family we certainly talk about beliefs. We certainly talk, I mean, Sophie hears me talking about all this stuff. You know, she edited the book with me and talked about it and had ideas and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, what, she was 6.5 or 7. So I think it depends on whether it's being talked about. I think children can do this very, very early if they're invited to. I think if they're not invited to and they're growing up in what I would just call a general kind of all-American family of today.
Yeah, what is the typical American family? I mean, how do we describe that when we are now in this patriotic modality? Mm-hmm. What on earth is a typical and loving American family? How do you even describe that?
I don't know. But I do. But when I say it, I think that I am meaning it not necessarily in an incredibly positive sense. I think that many families are overextended. Children are so, so busy. They're structured to the hilt. There's none of that free time that you were talking about before in terms of just being able to just play
right.
and just create their worlds. Their worlds are being created for them.
Right.
And I guess that's, I would like to see the quote-unquote general American family, right, whatever that means, kind of evolve more in a direction that is more fluid and more open and more allowing of creativity and spontaneity.
Well, why do so many kids love to be frightened? Why do they love to go to scary movies and watch scary things on television?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for a lot of children, their lives, and I have to think of exactly how to phrase this, but I think their lives are so controlled. I mean, some of that I think is just some kids just love that. I mean, some, you know, maybe they're going to be the monster-making movie, you know, the movie makers of the future, and so they just love this and they're drawn to this. But I think it's not just children. I think our entire society is doing that. And I think that we're struggling with something. We're struggling with this sense of control and constriction. And I think there's freedom in being able to walk into a movie theater and get yourself so rattled that you're practically screaming. There's a release in that.
Yeah, maybe we're really sensing that we have been through about everything there is to go through in terms of our soul's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And children know that, and so they want to keep experimenting with how to overcome fear because they have known fear, even in the most loving family. They've known fear
absolutely.
Somewhere along the line.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so then they have to, they learn to, I guess, re-describe, as you put it, the world around them. This is always so interesting to me because the little kids in my life just, some of them don't even want to know about a fearful film.
Right, right.
And they'll start to scream if you even talk
the
about
mention,
it.
Right.
And yet the films that Hollywood makes, to a large extent, that is their M.O.,
mm-hmm.
is to make children's films that would get them in that screaming release mode.
Right. Right. But, I do think, Shirley, that we have a responsibility as adults to really monitor what we're feeding our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that I think some of what is coming out of Hollywood for kids is atrocious.
No question about that.
Yeah, and just because kids are drawn to it, I don't know that it should be, the faucet should just be turned on and everyone should be drinking freely. Because I think that's also happened in our society. When I look at the television shows, I mean, not in our society, but for adults, when I look at the television shows, I just think, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these fear shows that just increase and increase and increase. And I think that really that is not so much a clean or clear release, because I think that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is possible to go to a really fine piece of entertainment and get yourself absolutely spooked to the hilt and love it, enjoy it, and have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's another inside that is us just getting into kind of darker and darker and darker area and further and further and further away from ourselves. And I think
I'm just wondering if we're not attempting to work out the darkness that we've known before. I'm just wondering if that's not a natural, inherent, intuitive impulse.
I don't know. It seems to me we're creating more of it.
We certainly are. But maybe that is what... The two things bothering me. One, we are entertained by violence. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't... Absolutely. And violence and this probably... You know, there's good violence. I mean, there are some shows and some movies that I think are really, really fine. And if, you know, if we could hook some things up to maybe a Richter scale or something, you know, kind of like gold. If it's gold, the arrow goes way high, and if it's not, you know, plump, it drops through. Mm-hmm. I think there are some violent and scary movies that are solid gold. I mean, they're wonderful. And those are the ones that doesn't worry me. I think that is us trying to work through something, trying to figure something out, trying to, you know, we're tackling problems, we're tackling issues. But then I think there's this whole other contingency where if you put them on the scale, they would just bump, you know, reject, kind of go through. They're showing up at a 1 or a 2 on the Richter scale.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that concern me because I think they're addictive and they don't serve us.
Well, do you think it's good to look at our demons so that we can maybe learn to move away from them, or do we then get addicted to our own demons?
It depends on the way that we're looking at the demons.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what I mean by a 10 and a 1. A 10 provokes us. And it may be a more horrifying movie than the 1, but a 10 provokes us. It makes us stop. It makes us. It leaves us with something. It bothers us. It makes us, you know, it makes us do something with it. It invites us to kind of clear something out, to take a look at the mirror, to say, oh, my God, you know, there's a piece of me in there.
Well, but also, don't you think that when you look at that kind of demonic movie,
mm-hmm.
you learn the mechanisms of how to say, oh, it's just a movie. And then you move on to, well, my life is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I can overcome the things that I'm demonizing in myself in life.
Mm-hmm.
If we learn how to do it in a movie, maybe we can learn how to do it in real life when we walk out of the theater.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You think?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that it's important, though, the kind of movie or the kind of entertainment that's doing that, because I think some entertainment doesn't invite us to do that. It doesn't provoke anything
in us. Yeah, I see these
enough.
Movies that everything is an explosion or a car crash train
blood
wreck or whatever.
Yeah,
and then we
yeah.
see what's happening in the Middle East, and we don't. It's almost like a film to us. It's almost like it's
right.
not real.
Right.
And maybe that was one of the benefits of 9/11, because we know that was real.
Right.
And there are people in the world really suffering
mm-hmm.
from these events. Because they can't learn to get along,
and
we have been educated in little ways to it with these violent movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how we reconcile the First Amendment freedoms with this violence, and also so many of these cartoon pictures
mm-hmm.
are violent. So
mm-hmm.
it seems to be okay if a child sees these cartoon characters.
Right.
being violent because they're not real human beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that there's a large part of that desensitizes us. I think that, that we've taken so much violence in that when something does happen, we are truly desensitized. We truly cannot. We're on such overload. I mean, we really need, I think, to be careful about not only with children but ourselves. How much are we taking in? I mean, we do have to process this stuff, and if we're not processing it, then there's really no point in taking it in. I mean, it's kind of like just overeating and overeating. When you've stopped digesting 2 hours ago, you're still eating.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's why we're so overweight in this country. I mean, why do we eat so much?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we? Is it comfort food or something?
I think it's comfort food. I think we're not living the way that we're meant to be living. I think that it's something, we're just not living... We're just not there. We're just not there. We're close. We can feel it. We can sense it. But to get there, to live kind of the life that of that child that you're talking about in one of those schools where the walls are open and they're free to explore, I mean, that's what our life should look like.
Yeah.
That's what our lives should look like. If something's not interesting, we should have the freedom to move along. And I don't mean in the moment. I mean, there are times when we need to push through. So I don't mean as soon as something's not interesting, we leave.
Mm-hmm.
But we should have the right to explore and to move around. And we don't give ourselves that right.
I mean, and we don't take the time to process all the emotions that we feel about
Absolutely.
Whatever it is happening in our lives, all the stimuli that goes on.
Absolutely not. The stimuli from the outside and the stimuli from the inside. Because I really believe that we're being provoked all the time. I believe that whatever we see in the universe is a reflection of what's happening in us.
Well, right. So we're being provoked from the exterior. On the other hand, we're creating that exterior.
Exactly. And we have to stop and take a look and spend some time processing some of this.
Yeah.
And
that's what's
so
wrong with
that.
So much structured school time. And and we're all working too hard.
And
we don't take
adults are so structured.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is possible to work a lot because I do think that adults work should be their play. That is their play. But it can't be looking the way that it's looking. You know, I sometimes have clients come in who are working 50 and 60-hour weeks, and they're working in an office, and they're wondering why things aren't working. Well, it can't work like that. I mean, if you just add up the hours, that can't work. I mean, that
So
just,
you're saying that person who is frustrated there should just take the courage and somehow say, I will be myself and what, leave that job?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that's where, and I don't have a recipe for everybody. I think that's where we get kind of the part of themselves that's not physical involved. And we talk to that part. You know, what does that part think? Because if we intend to have a life that has room, whatever this person is who's working 50 and 60 hours, whatever it is that they're wanting,
mm-hmm.
if they start to intend to have that kind of a life, their guides will begin to leave messages for them. They'll start to get hints about what it is that they need to do. And it may be radical. It may be that they need to walk in the next day and say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's not quite that radical. Usually it may be that they need to get up 5 minutes earlier and enjoy a cup of tea on the deck.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that when they have a little hunch about, gee, they should stop at the park and pick up a pebble, they should do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, usually it's not, and I think that's what scares us. We think that we're going to be told, you know, drop everything and move to, you know, wherever, the North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
And some people get that, but most of us don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't. I mean,
so we're really talking, well, most of us are in these, well, I don't happen to be a person who is unhappy in my work, but I know a lot of people who are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about, I guess, materialism, too, that we have this competition of making more money.
Absolutely.
And being more recognized in our each little society and so forth.
Right.
And that's how we survive on top. But what you're talking about is evolution within.
Well, and how we survive on top doesn't work. I mean, that's the real disaster. It doesn't work. So that if we're playing the game on top, if we're getting further and further away from our what I call our authentic self or our true self, who we're really meant to be, and that's many, many things. That's a flowing, ever-changing creature. I mean, that's not a static entity. But the further away we get from that, the more I think we get talked into the games of our society, of our ego, of, oh, when you have this, then you'll be happy.
Right.
So when you have that, you'll be happy. When you have this car, you'll be happy. Well, it never happens. It never happens. Or we get, it's like a high.
Mm-hmm.
We get high for a little bit, and then poof.
Mm-hmm.
It shifts, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a hangover,
mm-hmm.
and then we're depressed. You know, so then again, the ego says, oh, don't worry. No, I got it now. You just need to, you know, make $20,000 more. Then you'll be happy. So off we go, trudging, $20,000, and we get there, and oh, great high, and then again, the same thing happens again. It can't work. It can't work.
Yeah.
I mean, and the outside game is fun. It's great fun, but it's only fun if we're really doing what we're supposed to be doing on this planet, and that's inside.
And that's inside.
Absolutely. I think everything flows from inside. Everything.
So we're involved with making our brains grow, but we're also, we should be involved with making our hearts grow.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How do we do that, Regina?
Oh, yes. I think we have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just really think we have to stop. And even if it's just, you know, it's amazing how hard it is for me to get clients sometimes to just stop. To just, and I'm not talking about, you know, go sit up on top of the roof and, you know, some position and meditate for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking, could you just put a piece of music on for 5 minutes?
Not use your will, but surrender.
Yeah, just surrender. Just for 5 minutes. Could you just light a candle? Could you just listen to yourself breathe? Anything. Anything. Could you look at a flower?
Mm-hmm.
And that is so hard for people.
And that's when we get into talking with ourselves, so we
Absolutely.
Need more of that self-talk.
Absolutely. And I think what is difficult is if we haven't done that for so long, and I think many people have not done that for so long, that there's not going to be joy in that right away. You know, that they're going to sit and look at the candle, and they're going to have to listen to a lot of garbage because they've got an overactive brain.
Mm-hmm.
They've got an overactive ego. So it's not going to be pleasurable right off.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to get this, you know, it's like this overdeveloped muscle. It's kind of like lifting weights on one side and
yeah.
not, you know, so we're kind of lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you first start to lift
so
up
we're brain-sided.
Hmm?
We're brain-sided.
We're brain-sided. I like that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're brain-sided. And our brain is a wonderful thing, but it should be coming from what is coming below it. It should be coming up into.
So it's really a merger between the heart and the mind.
Yeah.
Or
I think,
the heart and the brain, because the mind
is. I think the
brain
works for the heart.
Yeah.
I think the brain works for the heart.
Now, where does humor fit in all this?
Oh,
I mean,
everywhere.
Suddenly you realize how ridiculous your life is.
Everywhere. Everywhere. I mean, I just think we take ourselves so seriously. Oh, my God. We take ourselves so seriously.
Really?
And I'm in Washington, D.C., so, you know, certainly one of the capitals of taking oneself
of serious
seriously.
Taking.
And I think we just need to let go of that because we cannot grow and evolve if we're so very, very, very important. I mean, we just can't do it because then it's scary. You know, and that's where I think children are our greatest teachers because they are absolutely uninhibited.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately not as long anymore, but certainly a 2 or 3-year-old is still uninhibited. They're wide open. They don't mind falling.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to learn to walk. They're not put off in the least. You know,
right.
They waddle down with their little diaper and they stand back up. I mean, there's no, oh my God, what will people think?
Right.
I mean, how can we possibly learn and grow if we're shaming ourselves at every, it's just not possible.
Right.
I mean, it's just not possible. And I think humor just breaks that down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we just can't take ourselves seriously if we're laughing. I don't think you can do both at the same time.
Well, it's sort of what the great masters say, just try to remain as childlike as you can.
Absolutely.
In this on this journey. Now let's talk a little bit about pain because you write quite
mm-hmm.
well about embracing pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you embrace pain, tell me the difference between embracing pain, learning from it, and being self-indulgent in the fact that you have it.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
That's a hard one, and I struggle with that all the time. And I know what it feels like inside. But yeah, I have a really hard time communicating that to others.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a difference. There is a difference. And when you're wallowing in something, and it's not necessarily just because you've been in it 10 years. Some people are going to be stuck in something for 10 years, and they just really are not capable of moving yet. That's not the same thing as somebody who really is capable of shifting something at this moment in time. I mean, I think we all have different capacities as we go through time. I think there's some teachings out there right now that you should just be able to just think and poof, it's gone. And technically that's very true. I mean, technically I know I should be able to walk through a wall. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I should be able to do that. I should be able to levitate.
Mm-hmm.
I should be able to just drift to wherever you are right now. I believe that's totally possible. I believe I'm totally capable of that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm not probably going to do that in this lifetime.
But also those same people would say that we're creating the pain or creating the disease or creating the thing that's making us miserable.
I don't think that's true. I think that we are meant to be levitating and floating and you know, just thinking beautiful thoughts and creating them. But we're also meant to be physical. We're also meant to be alive. And part of the life on this planet right now is agony and ecstasy. There's both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the difference between wallowing in pain, I mean, the pain is a key to unlock what is inside.
Mm-hmm. That might want to come out, and the only way it can is through experiencing.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Because if I have something, let's say I have something in my childhood, and this is not all childhood, but whatever. Let's say I have something in my childhood, or that I'm bringing from some past life. I've got some real block.
Right.
I'm not going to just go up to the attic and stir things up. I mean, I'm really not. I mean, anyone who's done serious work, and I think all of us have, who wants to crawl around the floor weeping with their guts wrenched out? I mean, I'm not going to volunteer for that.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone were to say to me, okay, Regina, you can have, you know, just incredible pain for the next 15 days, and then you're going to have this magnificent epiphany, I'm probably not going to sign up. And I'm somebody who even loves things like that. I'm probably not going to sign up. The universe is going to need to nudge me a little bit. And the way the universe nudges me is with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we do have a choice in terms of how we go through that. I think we have a choice in terms of how soon we respond to that, so that if the universe just taps lightly, I'm going to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to wait until it slams me so hard I'm in a hospital or I'm in a deep depression. You know, I don't want to wait. So I think that's one thing about pain.
Hmm.
And I think the other thing is that we're scared of pain.
Yeah.
We're scared of it. People come see me, they want the pain to stop. They don't want to move through it. They just want it to go away. They want to avoid it. But when we avoid it, we make a bigger mess.
Well, now, when they come to you with pain and they want to be through with the pain, do you take them through why they have the pain?
Again, it depends. It depends on what they're coming up with. And it depends on whether they're open to really shifting it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are really not open to shifting it. Many are. And I should, and my practice in particular, that's what I'm drawing right now. So that's what I'm seeing are people who are really wanting to shift and wanting to move. And again, it depends. I think, for example, somebody who has been horribly traumatized as a child, that story needs to be told. And you know,
through that pain in order to express that story.
Absolutely.
You would recommend not brushing it aside or underneath the rug. You would say, let's talk about it. Go through those feelings and come out the other side.
Absolutely. And as fast as we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as quickly, I mean, let's not, and it doesn't have to be in real time. It doesn't have to be, you know, for every year you had, we're going to take a year or two. It doesn't have to be long. When you're ready, you're ready. But there's a child inside who needs to hear his or her story told. And they're not going to shut up until they hear their story told right. And the other thing is, the story, most likely because it's stuck, is not being told right.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have a survivor, for example, but this is true for everyone. I'm using trauma with a big T. But this is true for traumas with a little T, for life with a little L. I mean, it's true for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up happening is that child comes into adulthood knowing something's wrong with them, knowing that they caused this, knowing that they were bad, and if they weren't bad, so-and-so wouldn't have done such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go back to the roots. You can't, I mean, you can push it down, but it's just going to pop up somewhere else.
Yeah, and it takes so much psychic energy to keep it underneath.
Oh, tremendous. Tremendous.
Do you think, Regina, that anyone is authentically mean or evil?
Well, this is probably a very controversial answer, but no.
I don't either.
No, I don't.
I don't believe in capital punishment.
Yeah.
I believe in, and let's study this person and see what made them a serial murderer or whatever.
Absolutely.
What about suicide bombers? What do you think about that?
I think they're lost. I mean, I think that the further away we get from that light, the more confused and desperate we become to make something work. And the more
confused and desperate and poverty-stricken we are, the more we are confused and driven away from the light. don't you think?
That's, I don't know. That's a hard one because there are some real beams of light in some really atrocious places. So that's I struggle with that one. I think by and large, yes, it's harder. I mean, it's depressing. I mean, if it's depressing just because of, it would be very, very hard to maintain yourself in the middle of just atrocity after, you know, in a Holocaust camp or something. I mean, it would be very, very difficult to maintain, you know, a free flow of light. So I think certainly situational things do make things worse. I think that's absolutely true. But then we find these gems, these people that just are glowing in the middle of, you know,
children that
look at us and smile.
Yeah.
And
they have turned the people who are their oppressors into forgiving, living, loving beings. The
right.
story of Stephen Schwartz is that.
Right, right.
That's that wonderful story of he was a practicing yoga and was rather arrogant about it,
mm-hmm.
and was, I think, in Auschwitz, I'm not sure, being beaten by Nazi captors,
mm-hmm.
and somehow found the love in himself and said he loved them, at
mm-hmm.
which point, as he tells the story, they fell to their knees and cried
mm-hmm.
because he saw love in them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who visits these things on another human being must not like it. That's your point, yes?
Well, anybody who's doing this on another human being is lost. I mean,
yeah.
they're lost because we're one. I mean, we're really just one. There's one energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do to somebody else. I mean, you're doing it to yourself on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing it to yourself, something's really wrong. It's like watching a child bang their head against the wall.
Right.
Something's really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean you just say, oh, okay, that's fine, that's wonderful, we're not going to do anything. But yes, capital punishment, what does that do?
Yeah.
What does that
do? And you talk about that what we focus on grows. So if we focus on the negative, the negativity
Absolutely.
Will grow. If we focus
Absolutely.
On the light will grow.
Absolutely.
Is it important to make a journal of your feelings?
You know, that's mixed. I think for some people it's very important. I don't think it matters that you keep it. I don't think it has to be around. If I have people who just write and then throw it out, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something about the process of writing for most of us. And again, I don't think there are any recipes because we're so different and what works for each of us and what turns each of us on or off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for most of us, there's something about writing. There's something about putting a pen or a pencil in our hand. It's almost like we invite somebody else into the room.
Right.
You know, it's almost like
our guides, our angels,
yeah.
our
yeah.
muses.
Yep. Yep.
And that's why so many novelists end up saying, I didn't write the novel.
Absolutely.
The characters did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And in that way you connect with your intuition and your sense of knowingness that comes from some place that maybe has not that much to do with your so-called real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't really lie. I mean, you can lie for a little while, but it doesn't. If you really come back to it on a regular basis, you can't lie. So if something really is bothering you, it's going to start showing up again and again and again.
Yeah, it comes out in different ways.
Yep. Yep.
Now, if there is this kind of fire of whatever it is inside you, fire of vengeance, fire of anger,
fire of
anything.
In the negative sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you really want to throw water on it, or do you want to get into it?
Yeah, that's a hard question because that's the last chapter of the book, and I'm using fire in a totally different way.
Mm-hmm. So
I would say get into it, but not act it.
Get into it so that you can feel the reasons why you feel the fire of negativity.
Get into it, but not act it. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So I work with EMDR, which I don't know if you know about, but it's a pretty incredible, I guess, technique for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
But it speeds things up inside, and it helps the brain make connections that it might not otherwise make.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is coming in and talking about hate, and they're just hating somebody, and they're just wanting to rip them apart, and just filled with hate.
Mm.
If I take that person and we start from that place and I just hear them and I acknowledge, yes, you're filled with hate, and let's just go with that. And if we just go with that, eventually we're going to end up somewhere. We're going to end up most likely with a little kid crying.
Well, also, we'll end up with finding our light, won't we? Because your whole premise, and mine too, is that at the bottom of all of it is God, light, and love.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's just to go through that fire, or to not be afraid of it, or to be able to look at the demon and not be demonized, you'll end up with the light that you've been missing.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole genius of trying to remain innocent, isn't it?
Yeah, clear. Because I think really innocence is just is clarity. It's openness. It's willingness to just be here as I am today, with no tomorrow, with no yesterday, as I am today. A willingness to step out as if I've never been on this planet before. And what a wonderful way to live. It's a very exciting way to live.
Okay, this is how we used to be, and now let's do Once Upon a New Time.
Yeah.
Do you think, Regina, there really is a new energy that's coming that we are experiencing in this acceleration of all the emotional problems we have?
Yes. And even as you're saying that, I'm covered in goosebumps. Yes. I think that we, you know, it's funny because, you know, we look at the news and we look, it's awful. I mean, the world's a mess. We're a mess. We're killing each other. We're blowing. I mean, it's a mess. But I think the flip side is there is this energy right now that is passing through it. I feel it in my life. I see it in my client's life. I mean, if you want to catch a wave and ride, this is the time to do it. I think that we are, I mean, we're just at warp speed. If you can think it, it's going to happen. If you can imagine it, it's going to happen. I think we're being invited to join with our non-physical, the non-physical portion of ourselves like never, ever, ever before.
Right, and we're also invited to see the polarities in ourselves and others that we never even recognized before.
Yes.
And that's probably what's going on in the world.
Yes.
Do you have a good feeling about it? Let's just take the Middle East. What is your feeling? You might have one definition of how you would see the future of how you experience it, of course, and someone else might have another. But
right.
What do you think will happen?
Well, I think nothing's going to happen unless all of us take a look at what's happening within. I mean, the Middle East could not be happening. What's happening in the Middle East could not be happening if we were all clear. I mean, it just could not be happening.
So if Sharon sat down and tracked the source of his anger, and if Arafat sat down, if the two of them sat down together and each tracked the source of their own individual problem, which is what I guess Colin Powell is trying to do.
Well, but I'm even saying it a step further. I'm saying we all need to do that. That we can't be creating, I mean, we're creating this violence, all of us.
Yeah.
All of us. We can't have what happened on 9/11, and I know that this is really provocative for a lot of people, but I don't believe we can have what happened on 9/11. I mean, that's a wake-up call for us. It's like, wait a minute, what are we sending out?
Yeah, there's no question about that. And to me, even, well, Osama bin Laden was more responsible for people taking a look at their spirituality than all the popes put together.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So you have to say, well, all right, now, this happened for a reason.
What worries me, though, is that we won't take the opportunity.
Well, now, will you go with the worry, or will you go with the certainty that we will? Because that energy you put out is going to be felt.
Absolutely. No, I don't go with the worry. I trust that everything that is happening for a reason, and that if we're interested in tapping into our own highest good, there's an opportunity there.
Well, there's no question it's an opportunity, is there?
Yeah. I mean, I see this as just a capital T trauma for the world. I see it as no different than when it's a capital T trauma for ourselves. It's just that we're all doing it together. And what worries
me... And what worries you?
What worries me is this us and them. You know, that this is something that's happening over there, and we should go over there and you know, just put a stop to all this, and this will fix it. To me, that's the same thing as capital punishment. And I don't know what the answer is, but I know that energy is not going to work because hating war is just going to create more war. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. We've got to start loving peace for everyone.
Oh, that's very interesting. Hating war. Oh, that's very interesting. So the emotional vibration we should be exuding is loving peace
loving
and not
peace.
Hating. Oh, that's very interesting, Richard.
Because I think when we yearn for something,
yeah.
I think we just create more yearning.
Well, you know, it's like they say, the universe does not recognize the word not.
Right.
Or the word hate.
Right.
So when
right.
you say, I will not be mad today, that's the same as saying you will be.
I'm going to be mad. Because,
and I hate
yeah.
war means war is part of my life.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the more energy we put into it, the more we're going to invite whatever it is into our lives. Yeah, because it can't tell the difference. It can't tell the difference. It's like electricity. You know, it's either on or it's off. I mean, and if we're having a big emotional surge about something, we have the electricity on.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not recognizing, oh, I'm not turning the light on. No, I'm turning the light on with all this energy. I am turning the light on. But I may
well, that's
be
really
the light
what
on.
Happened with the harmonic convergence, don't you think, when so many millions of people got together?
Mm-hmm.
Was it 1987 or something?
Yeah, I'm awful with dates.
Yeah, me too. And then they did that meditation for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, soon after that, the Berlin Wall came down.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is some really powerful, peaceful energy that in the end there is nothing more profound if people get together and do it.
Oh, we have, I really think, Shirley, we have no clue. I mean, if after 9/11, and obviously this is not entirely realistic, but if after 9/11, within 4 or 5 days, the entire United States had stopped and had stepped outside with a candle or a flower and had just sat down and closed their eyes and sent love to the other side of the world, we would just be in a different place.
You know, that's what I did on my website with all the people I have on my site. And I said, I did a meditation on let's send everyone, light.
Yeah.
Boy, did I get criticized.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to own it. I mean, we really don't want to own it. We want it to be someone else. We don't want to take responsibility for it. We don't want to own it. It's not ours. It's happening somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ours.
And when you're involved in the anger and the sorrow and all the negative emotions that this particular time in the world is spreading,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to find that ownership of peace and love in your heart because you get involved with the swirls of the negativity.
It is. And I think that that's, you know, when we were talking earlier about children and ourselves and kind of shielding energy and being careful what we're taking in because we can only process so much,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to be really careful even how much negativity we take in. You know, I think there's only so much news we can be watching.
Yeah.
We really need to be careful. If we're taking something in and we can hold it, we need to process it, and we need to process it into something that we can send back out in a positive way. Like, for example, the meditation that you're talking about that you did.
Yeah.
But that takes some work. You know, that takes some work because it's hard to process this. It's hard to look at what's happening and really take it in and process it through to where we can have some compassion for both sides. Because
yeah.
there's no difference.
Yeah, and we've had such a history in the human race of this profound tragedy that,
mm-hmm.
well, that's why I think it's an opportunity. I agree with you. Tremendous opportunity to kind of spin our own web of dreams and well, like you say, prime the pump of the light inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask someone else how you can help them.
Yeah.
I loved your book. It's just wonderful. And we did it all in 1 hour.
Thank you.
Oh, this is just, you were just
this
terrific. Thanks for
great.
Taking these very profound notions and making them so simple.
Well, thank you so much. This has just been wonderful. And you know, I have to tell you that my infusion of spirituality into my life and my work in a way that had words and a form started out with your book, Out on a Limb.
Did it really?
It certainly did. And it had such a profound effect on my life. And I just thank you so much for sharing everything that you've shared with us. I mean,
well, you're welcome,
you so
Regina.
Much.
And also, it really doesn't... People who... I think now all this stuff is getting to be really quite mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
But when people think it will hurt them to express their spiritual beliefs and longings and questions and curiosity. That's what you're talking about, to find who your authentic self is, because authentically we're just spiritual beings in a body.
Right.
Well, thanks so much, and I hope we can talk and meet.
Okay, I would love that.
Thank you very much.
That.
Bless you, Regina.
Thank you. Bless you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.